Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Terrence Howard. My mother was the cornerstone of our family. She shaped me as an actor, a musician, as a human being. So when she was diagnosed with colon cancer, it was like our whole family got cancer. And she died when she was only 56, so this is personal. Now hopefully my heartbreak is your wake-up call. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer, but you can prevent this disease. Screening finds precancerous polyps so that they can be removed before they turn into cancer. I've been screened. If you think that you're at an increased risk like I am, ask your doctor when to start screening. And if you're 50 or older, get screened. I don't have my mother anymore. So please, do everything that you can to stay around for yourself and for your family. Screening saves lives.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Good morning and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. You can follow me on Twitter.com/Joy Keys, and you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. Also, send me an email. I would love to hear from you. My email address is SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@Hotmail.com. I would really encourage you to follow or become a fan because I'm giving away things all the time. We have surpassed 100,000 downloads, and for almost the last 7 days or so, I was giving something away every day, Starbucks gift cards, Home Depot gift cards, all types of things, CDs. This weekend, I'll be giving away my guest book, Rent Versus Own, so you, again, you want to follow on Twitter, @JoyKeys, or become a fan on Facebook. Are you on Team Rent or Team Own? Which one are you and why? Well, today I'm speaking with Jane Hodges, who's an expert reporter in real estate and finance, and she has a new book called Rent Versus Own. Well, Jane, good morning. Thank you so much for calling in.
Oh, thanks for having me.
This, like I said earlier, is a really easy to read, very I'm a visual. I love the blocking out of words and certain, you know, subject matter with the gray pages, and then you have resources at the end. It was just really great. I was like, wow, very easy to digest. Other books I've picked up about real estate or owning a home, or even I've been to workshops, and the things are like 1,000 pages long with technical words. I just can't wrap my head around. I won't remember when I actually go see the house. So thank you for writing an easy-to-understand book.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for checking it out. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the history of housing in America and what it means to be a homeowner. You hit on that in the book, but why don't you tell the audience a little bit about the beginning of, like, how homeowners were the only ones able to vote, whereas other people couldn't. So just talk about that a little bit.
Sure. Well, homeownership has really been ingrained in sort of the concept of what it means to be American. If you think of our country's history and that we fled other countries and came here and set up shop, part of what made the American sensibility different from the countries that founding families came from is that you could actually own land and create a homestead, and there were still lots of complicated layers to that in earlier times. But it's part of the sort of American dream, they say, to own your own property, whether you're talking about, you know, the Go West young man and settle the land and be a homesteader and do the little house on the prairie thing from the 19th century, or buying a place in the suburbs in the Mad Men era and having your big yard with a fence around it, and that's your little castle. It's really been part of our story of what it is to achieve something. And owning a home has been considered part, sort of a chapter in everyone's personal success story in our country. But I think that has changed over time, not just because of the mortgage meltdown, but also because the way people live in an information society, in a mobile society, people don't necessarily stay as long in their homes as they used to. More families are, you know, two-earner couples, or there's different kinds of households that are created at different times in life. So there's a lot of demographic and kind of social reasons why owning a home isn't going to be this thing you buy it and stay there for 25 years. People still want to own a home. It just, there's rules around it are shifting.
Yeah. Now, the issue of owning a home is, like you said, a marker, almost like a developmental marker in America. But is it our idea or is it propaganda? And that's one of the things you also talk about in the book, and how the government at different times and even currently is going back to how home ownership is the way to go. If you don't own a home, you know, basically you're un-American. But a lot of people couldn't get homes. I mean, due to discrimination, redlining, for racial reasons, you know, banks, you know, redline literally. They have documents where they put a red line. And now even today with people, LGBT community, they are having discrimination with renting. They can't apply for different federal things because they're not considered a family because they're not married. So,
right.
So people, everybody is not going to be able to own a home. And then, you know, what does that person do? And they are looked down upon because they're a renter?
Well,
you know?
you bring up a lot of interesting points because up until more recently than you would think, the communities you're talking about have had more issues getting mortgages than the typical, you know, married couple or the typical, you know, well-heeled person. And even into the 80s, well, there were some shifts in the 80s, but even in the sort of our mother's generation, I'm in my early 40s, women would have trouble buying homes on their own. Or if a woman worked, her income, they would only count half her income toward the household income against which they created a mortgage because they assumed the woman would eventually quit and have kids. So there was a lot of really weird discrimination. Even recently, there were lenders, and this is now illegal again, but there were lenders that were discriminating against pregnant women applying for mortgages by saying, well, we're not going to count all your income because you're going to go on maternity leave. And while that's something that the borrower should think about, can I afford this, the lender, I don't think, should decide for the borrower, you know, oh, you can't buy a house because you're, you know, you're in your third trimester. I mean, that's a little crazy.
Right, right. Yeah, so, I mean, women, you know, couldn't, you know, own property at one time in this country, couldn't vote and all those things. So definitely, you know, we do make less. One of the stories you bring up in the book is about a single parent who got divorced, and then her income, she had to leave her home.
Right.
And the rise of single parenthood, I mean, most single parents are female-headed households. There are male-headed households. But that being the case, if they're mostly women-headed households, and women are still making, you know, 20% less than a man, then how likely is that woman will be able to afford, you know, housing? I mean, HUD did a study in 2000 that 25% of white applicants were still favored above those who were African-American or Hispanic, and that was just 12 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's still going on. But now let's talk about this issue of looking for a home and where should we look for a home, and can we afford the home? You know, our eyes are bigger than our pockets sometimes.
Right. Well, I think one of the things I've tried to get across in the book, and I'm not the only place you could go for this kind of message, but is that you are able to borrow more than you really ought to. When you go to a mortgage lender to find out what you could borrow, the maximum that they tell you is not a prescription for what you're supposed to spend on your housing. It's just what is possible. So there are instances when you might want to borrow the maximum that you can. If you know, for instance, you know, your income is going to go up in a couple years, mm-hmm. and so you don't mind eating a little ramen to get into this place that's going to become ever more affordable. But if you're kind of at the height of your earning years, you're in the middle of your profession or something, you might not necessarily want to do that. The other thing, I think, if people are thinking seriously of buying and thinking what they ought to spend on their housing, you might want to set a budget first and say, this is my hard line, this is what I want to spend on my mortgage, and then go see what that mortgage would look like instead of seeing what's possible and being passive about it and letting someone else tell you what to spend. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, one of the things I liked is that you've talked about a couple in there and they were looking for a home and they tried to look for a home that they could afford on one salary.
Right.
And I think that was really good to bring it up that, yes, they had two incomes, but, you know, anything can happen, and based on the type of businesses that they had, they said, well, if somebody's business goes down the tubes, at least we don't have to move.
Right.
So, you know, home also is representing a sense of stability and that non-transit. But, you know, there are a lot of places in the globe, and then you bring that up too, in other countries where home ownership isn't that big. And then if we think about people who are like nomads, the home is where they made it. You know, they're moving because of season, because of agricultural reasons. And are they, you know, not good people? Are they not stable? Are they communists? You know?
Right.
You know,
right.
So talk about that.
What you're bringing up is home ownership compatible with the lifestyle that you're really going to live? And,
yes.
You know, for instance, there are people who might buy a home in a suburb that's a pretty long drive from the center of town where, you know, more of the jobs are, but they happen to work on the side of town near their suburban property. Well, guess what? Fast forward 2 years, everyone's jobs have changed, and now you're driving each an hour in different directions. And it's, I mean, you're not going to sell the house because of that, but because it's such a big commitment to get into, and it would be expensive to sell if you hadn't been there long. But then suddenly you have these huge commutes and your lifestyle's changed a lot. You don't have time for the gym, or you're always in the car, or,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, you're stressed out. It's really stressed. The homeowners, one of the things, that's a myth, too, that, you know, homeowners are these, like, happy people, and, you know, they're planting their flowers, and, you know, they're going, doing their barbecues and sharing tools. But you mentioned about different studies that they can be stressed out, maybe more so than a renter, because of maybe they got a house they couldn't afford, or, you know, the commute issues. Or one was a single guy. He moved into a great place, but then there were no other single people around. So
Right. Socially,
he was messed up. Let's move to the down payment issue. And that is a really big, you know, with this subprime loan and, you know, the fall and all these deregulation, all stuff. You know, in the past, you talked about 50% of the home, the cost of the home had to be put down. Then it moved to 20%. And then now it's like 5%, you know?
Right.
But what's the pros and cons of that, of putting a larger down payment versus a smaller one? And then there was the PMI you talked about also in the book.
Right. Yeah, it is interesting because in the past, it was a very few people could buy a home because you had to put such a big down on it and pay it off in 5 or 10 years. And once we had the shift to you have 30 years to pay it off and you can do a 20% down or less with some programs, a lot more people got into the game. But in our current times, most first-time buyers don't make a 20% down payment. That's an awful lot of money if you look at what homes cost. And we can't fault them for that. However, if you don't put a big down payment on your property and you don't stay very long, then you're not going to have a lot of equity when you leave that property and sell it. So I guess one of the messages I want people to think about is not just how do I qualify to get into a home, but what's going to happen if I want to leave that home in 2 or 4 or 5 years? Am I going to have to bring money to closing because I have no equity? So on the one hand, you want to have enough of a down payment so you start with some equity and can build on it. But then again, if you pull every penny out of every corner to get into a home, you're not going to have any funds for emergencies. So that's something you really have to think about. How do I have some equity but also have a little cash on hand for inevitable problems that everyone runs into? It's
well, that's one of the – you bring up that issue that owning a home is, you know, illiquid, that it's not this, you know, thing that you can get in and out of quickly. So – I'm glad that you emphasized that, yes, maybe I can get this home and I can put this low down payment, but what am I going to do in the future? You also have a whole chapter about, you know, repairs, you know, being like a Martha Stewart. And once you get in a home, if something breaks, you know, say I hear friends all the time, I'm a renter, but I hear friends who own homes and they are like, you know, my water heater broke over the winter. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
Or friends, their stepdaughter let the tub run over and it flooded and like almost basically messed up the second floor of the house.
Oh, sure.
So that was like a huge repair and, you know, $5,000 or more. So, you know, these are issues that people have to think about also. So not only can you afford the mortgage, but do you have savings?
Right.
You know, after the mortgage.
And during the boom that we just exited, one of the issues that happened was because home prices appreciated so rapidly, people weren't thinking about the old-fashioned way of building equity, which is staying put and just paying the mortgage. You do build equity over time. So if you stay put and you're just paying the mortgage, you are paying it off. But if you buy a home, you stretch to get into it, And then there's an emergency and you have no emergency savings. What a lot of people were doing during the boom is home equity loans. So you're borrowing against your home's future sale price. And as long as the market's good, that worked out for a lot of people. But when the market turned, these people have basically jacked up their debt even further beyond what they could get for selling the house.
That's
why I think it's really important for people to understand how equity works, not to be afraid or not to buy too small a home if you really need a home of a certain size and price tag, but you just need to understand that your behavior needs to change once you become a homeowner so that you are not felled by sudden expenses and problems, not only with maintaining the house, but elsewhere in your life. I mean, I know people who've lost income, like they haven't lost a job, but, you know, they have a little furlough or their income's gone down 10%. And subtle things like that happen, and it's really, owning a home becomes really less pleasant when you're a broker.
Right, your broker. Well, also when you're renting, now let's talk about renting a little bit. People have to make deposits, and also similar to getting a house, now there's really this push for credit checks. No matter where you go, they're going to check your credit. And a good credit score is in the 700s or so, but people may not have that for a number of reasons. Could have debt, you know, could be a single parent, and they could have had made some bad choices in life, and so they have debt. But if you're renting, you have several stories in there about people who couldn't get a place because their credit. And even if they had a letter from their previous landlord saying we paid on time, it was just cut and dry. Sorry, we don't even look at you because your credit score is not. What are people supposed to do about that? If all they can do is rent, they can't even. They don't have money to down payment on a home. They need a place to live.
Right. I think when people have credit issues and are looking to rent, I think one strategy is to look for an independent landlord, not a big, huge management company where there's just some guy at a desk and he doesn't actually own the building and he screens things into the yes and no pile and the rules were set by someone above his head. If you're renting a place, a condo or a house that is owned by someone who used to live there and now they're this indie landlord, often these are listings like on Craigslist, you may be able to tell your story to this person and say, look, you're asking $1,000 a month. That's what I've always paid. I have this bad credit because I got divorced and my ex went crazy with the cards.
Bankruptcy.
Bankruptcy is, there's different flavors of bankruptcy, but if you've paid your rent on time, that's landlords want their rent. They don't really, if you're a bad driver, if you show an ability to pay your rent on time, you can make the case. It's going to be harder for you and the universe of options will be smaller, but I don't think it's impossible, especially coming off a poor economy. I think people are happy to get their places filled. And also if you plan to stay a while, landlords like to know that the place is a
steady person. Now, sometimes it's good to rent. For example, if you talk about this separation line of youth equal rent and older equal home. But depending on the type of job you have, if you're in entertainment, I mean, I have a lot of friends who lived in New York. It was like, own a home. Like, what? No, I'm going to L.A. Or if you're, a consultant, you're constantly traveling, you're not going to be around to maintain that property. Also, if you're older and you retire, I have a cousin who lives actually a block from me, and she has a nice home a block away, but she's like, I want to move to a condo. I don't want to have to deal with this anymore. She's kind of like a homeowner exhaustion or something,
Right. Well, I think most people in their life will own at some point or will at least want to own. And like you said, it's sort of it's not impossible if you have a career where you move a lot to be an owner. In fact, I was speaking with some folks from the military, and the military has an interesting loan program that's only open to military and military alums called the VA loan, which is 0% down payment loan. So, but everyone knows people in the military tend to move a lot because that's what you have to do to rise in your career. Kind of like media.
Right.
I'm sure people move from small to bigger markets and get their sea legs and everything. So you have these people who've bought homes with no down payment, and then in 3 years they have to move because of whatever promotion's coming. And they can't really sell the place, and, so there are now these chat boards. Someone told me about one called Coastie to Coastie, where people that are in the military Coast Guard rent their homes to other people who are coming to the same towns to work at the same bases. So if you're prepared that if I own this home, I might have to be a landlord if I want to keep doing what I've been doing. I mean, if you really think about it and plan for it and strategically choose a place, some condo buildings don't want but so many units to be rented out. They want the primary owner living in them. But if you find a building where you could be that owner who rents it out, it's not impossible. It's just you got to go in knowing the rules on these things. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a key word, planning. You brought that up. And I think for anybody who's listening, that is the issue is what is it that you are going to be doing in your life? And not just job-wise, but socially, your family. Where do you see yourself 5-10 years from now? And then, you know, you bring up relationship stories. You yourself had a relationship story. You had the team rent, which you dumped. And then now you're with team own. Yay, team own. I just put my rocker fingers up there. But and when relationships, that it brings up a lot of emotions in renting and owning come up. It's not just this money thing. So planning is key, and if you're not ready to plan, then maybe you have to break that relationship up.
It's interesting. Single women buy property at twice the rate of single guys, and that's been pretty true for a couple decades, and some of that is later marriage. Some of it's the single mom thing and wanting your kids to be in a place you chose, in a school district that you chose. But some of it's also kind of the nesting thing. But I also think, even though it's said that women earn less and so owning may even be riskier for them, I also think women realize if I buy a place and I stay put for a long time, this will be part of my mix of assets. And they're actually using homeownership as a strategy, plus perhaps the stereotypical women like to nest and decorate and everything. I actually think that might be part of the reason women are getting into it earlier on their own. And guys look at it a little bit differently. They're like, I'll buy a place when I meet that lady or whatever.
Yeah, I think that's true. I have several female friends who own their homes, and they're happy, and they're not with somebody, and they're not giving up their home.
Right.
And I have one friend who was kind of enticed to try to move out the state, but, you know, she really was thinking hard because she was like, my home is here. I own this home. I think she's almost done, or she might have paid the home off. So, you know, it's a big deal when you actually do buy the home. But renting is not bad either. I mean, if you don't want the responsibility of repairs, taxes, because that's one of the things you talk about, too. People get tax breaks, but there's still, you know, taxes you have to pay. And, you know, it's just not what it used to be. The idea of if you're not a homeowner, then you're just, like, un-American. I don't think that's the case. I mean, I don't see that anymore. But I know people used to always tell me, why don't you own? I grew up with renters. You know, that's my history. My parents were renters. So to me, it's not so. One time they did own a home, and then we had to leave. My mom, I think she lost her job at the time, and, you know, so it was just like they couldn't continue to afford. So that's a key issue there is that if you're a couple, if one person loses the job, can you still afford it with the, you know, only one salary?
Right.
Those are things to think about, you know. But I grew up renting. I don't see anything crazy. And the funny thing is I've lived at my apartment now for 12 years.
Well, you bring up an interesting point because in a lot of the bigger cities, especially on the two coasts, and I would say Chicago also, Minneapolis, renting is more of a lifestyle. If you look at census data on the percentage of renters, it's much higher than it is in smaller, cheaper markets. And so if you're in one of these busy metro areas, renting is more common, but you also have what I would say lifestyle renters, people who have no plan to own because in New York, for instance, I mean, if you want a one-bedroom, it's probably $800,000. And, I mean, you have to be very wealthy.
Can I sell a kidney? I could sell a kidney. I don't need both my kidneys, right? I could sell one of those or something, get some blood.
You would have to put so much of your resources into, even if you had them, to that purchase that you would have really – your money wouldn't be anywhere else in the world except in that area that you're living in. So people rent, but I also think in these big markets there's been some rent upticks. I was just speaking to someone in San Francisco, and he's dirty.
That's expensive
and,
out there. San Francisco is very expensive.
It's very expensive. And so people want, paradoxically, because they go through a rent increase, they're like, I want to own because I want to fix my you know, monthly costs. But the even if your rent's going up $500,000, that's nothing compared to what your mortgage payment might look like in the same market. So having a big rent increase does kick a lot of people who are already thinking about buying off the fence to finally do it. But if that's your only reason, I would say you really need to do a little homework on what your new costs are going to be as an owner in terms of maintenance, in terms of your reduced mobility and your commitment to the zip code that you've just bought in.
Right. So it goes back to planning. I mean, I think that's the question is planning. You know, where are you in your life? Again, where do you see yourself a couple of years from now? And then the financial aspect, yes, it's an investment, but the return is not instant. And then if you need to get out of it, you know, it's not fast. It's not quick, fast. I mean, they make it seem, we only have a couple minutes, but, you know, they have these gimmicky shows that come on, you know, late at night. Oh, you can buy the property and flip it and, you know, my husband John did it and we got $500,000. I mean, it doesn't happen like that, though, all the time. But then sometimes it does, you know. It does. Some people flip houses and they make money fast.
Well, flippers, they have a very specific strategy, and they usually have a network of contractors, and they know when they look at the property, okay, we're going to pull this out, put that in, you know, and they can do it rapidly. But they're professionals at it. They're not, you know, Jane and Joy.
Yeah. But we're good people, too. We're good people, too, Jane and Joy. But I want to thank you so much, Jane,
for
coming on this morning. Great conversation, a lot of wonderful knowledge. I'll be giving away a copy of Rent Versus Own. Check out your website, rentversusown.net. She has a lot of wonderful resources. Also in the book, she has a lot of great resources. It's very easy to understand. And it's not the stop. It's just a start. Getting this book is a start. If you're thinking about should I continue to rent or should I buy, start with her book. You can win a copy. Follow me at Joy Keys or become a fan on Facebook. Check out her website again, rentversusown.net. Thank you so much, Jane, for coming on.
Oh, thank you for having me. You have a great weekend.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Again, you can follow me at Joy Keys on Twitter. You can become a fan on Facebook, and you could win a copy of Jane's book, Rent Versus Own. A lot of wonderful, useful information in there. Again, I'll mention her website, rentversusown.net. She's also on Twitter, rentversusown on Twitter, so you can follow her there and learn about some tips and tricks. But it sounds like the key is planning. But also, don't be afraid to continue to rent, and don't be afraid to check out housing. It may actually be affordable to you. There are a lot of programs cities have, you know, check out the federal government programs, but don't try to bite off more than you can chew, and think about the repairs you may have to make. Think about, will I still have savings if I buy this home? Think about how far commute is it from my job? Think about socially, are there people my age with my interests in the area? Will I be able to gel with my neighbors, or am I never going to talk to them and not invite them to the barbecue? So these are some things you want to think about. Thank you so much for tuning in. Again, you can follow me on Twitter.com/JoyKeys. You can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. Also, send me an email. My email is SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. I would encourage you to tune in next week. I'll be speaking with Yolanda Brown. She's the UK's premier saxophonist, but she also has 2 master's degrees in business management. How did she do all that? And she was working on her PhD. So you want to tune in next Saturday to listen to Yolanda Brown's music. Thank you so much for tuning in. You have a wonderful Saturday.
You feel like you know your man, but you may not know everything.
Of all the women living with HIV in the U.S., about 66% are African American.
And most of these women got HIV by having unprotected sex with a man. But more women are getting tested and looking out for themselves. To get a free HIV test, visit hivtest.org/takecharge or call 1-800-CDC-INFO. That's 1-800-232-4636. Take charge. Take the test. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.